Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Hey.
So we should probably go now. All right.
And we're in.
Hey, welcome back to Straight Candid Podcast, where we take pride in saying the wrong thing, drinking too much caffeine, and talking too fast. Here at Straight Candid, we live unfiltered. No edits, deletes, or drags and drops. Just two Minneapolis girls who hit record and keep it candid.
Let's get into it. Hello again.
Hello.
Hello. We are back. What episode is this? Holy crap. It's 37. Holy shit.
I think it's so funny. If when we were on KDWB the other week, which humble brag, that was awesome. Dave was like, well, how many episodes you guys had? 85?
85, 90, 100? What's your favorite one? We're like, we have a little bit under 40. And I'm like, I like 25.
But yeah, like, what a fun time that was.
That was a blast, you guys. If you haven't listened yet, it's on the iHeartRadio app. Did you find what it's called?
Yeah. So I actually listened just through the podcast. So I just went to my podcast app. And you type in the Dave Ryan Show, and it's titled If Carmel Could Talk.
Good Lord.
And I died laughing. I'm like, wow, they were creative with that name, because if you haven't yet, you know, a prior episode, I talked about my stuffed dog named Carmel. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, we'll post the episode.
I feel bad for Carmel. That's all I have to say. Yeah. I feel bad for Carmel. And if Carmel could talk, she or he or whoever would tell you a lot of things that you don't need to know.
Yep, anywho. It was a really cool experience to kind of see a different type of in-studio recordings. It was weird because we had commercial breaks.
Yeah, which was, you were like, you're telling a story, and then they're like, and a 3, 2, and you're like, okay, yeah, we're next. Coming back. And I'm like, all right, but thank you. Used to that.
Thank you to everyone that was involved in that. So the Back Pocket production and
our crew.
Jackson came along, and it was real fun. So thank you guys.
Marcus was there. He was killing it with the camera, mm-hmm. as always. Not surprised. You guys, we are getting ready for Coachella this weekend. So freaking pop off. But this is coming to your ears on Thursday. You've got one day to figure out your orange outfit, okay? And mm-hmm. get your freaking Coachella themed. I almost said another word that we can't say anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Coachella is the word we're not supposed to say.
Oh, what? Okay. I can't. Okay. Coachella themed. Well, then I don't freaking give a crap. Who cares? Anywho, wear a little orange. The Straight Candid crew at Coachella will be taking a picture together. So you want to be there. You want to be wearing orange. So we know that you came and you thought of us too. So get there. We're freaking hyped. I'm hyped about it. We're going to go to your class before at Barry's and then get ready and then rush over.
Yeah. I'm so excited. It's going to be the best day of the summer. So.
Best day of the summer. We're also prepping for our boat episode. It's happening. It's going to be on August 8th. We actually asked Jordan and he actually said yes. So
thank God.
Literally, we're like planning a day. We're having people. We're making a plan, telling folks.
We told everyone, our sponsors, everyone about this August 8th. And we forgot to ask the man who had the boat. So
the only person to make it happen.
It is happening, but we still need your guys' help. So if you want to be part of that episode, we'll have 2 to 3 listeners hop on the boat with us. And all you have to do is submit the best Straight Candid story ever. And if you want to be eligible, you have to prompt that Straight Candid story with like, yo, get me on the boat. Here's my Straight Candid story.
There it is.
So make sure when you send that DM, you preface it with that, because that's how we're filtering through the contestants. And then the other way to be eligible is to also make sure you leave a review on Apple Podcasts. So send the Straight Candid moment and leave a review. And then
please,
boom.
And thank you.
More than likely, you'll be hopping on the boat. So just get on it, people. Get
this
on it.
This doesn't have to be a Straight Candid moment that happened yesterday. This could have happened 4 years ago. I don't really give a crap, but it's got to be good. And I know a lot of your moments are good, but think big, go big or go home for the day. Think Bud Light seltzers, think fun things, think drones, think a really fun day with good people and a new community that you can be a part of. So really, it's very gonna be amazing. Quick Straight Candid moments.
Yeah, let's do it
real fast.
So mine is actually, I think all four of you know about this, but have you seen my fingers?
What's wrong with your fingers?
The cuticles. What
am I looking at? Oh yeah, I know that. I know that. Yeah.
So do you guys remember me sending you the picture of my fingernails in our Snapchat group? Yeah.
Yes.
You don't? I sent you guys my nails. So I'm like, I'm fine. It's fine. I'm fine. So I pick up my fingers a lot, which is also why I don't get my nails done looking all pretty like SIDS. Like I have man hands. We're just not going to look close. So I have a habit of biting my nails, biting my fingernails, biting the cuticles around it.
Ow.
And it gets worse when I'm stressed. And y'all, the last 2 weeks of my life have been, for lack of a better word, I was going to say absolute hell, but like at the same time, I learned a lot, and it was a passion project of mine. We trained at Barry's for their opening that just opened in North Loop, Minneapolis. Barry's is a workout studio, but it was the craziest 2 weeks of my life, and I had to like leave you guys kind of on the back burner, and I just felt horrible about not replying to friends, not replying to you guys as often, and I just picked the shit out of my nails. My mental health was crazy. I had a couple anxiety attacks. It's real. It happens. And I'm better this week because I prioritize sleep and I'm prioritizing finding time for me because like I do feel like I'm spreading myself a little too thin. So you have to find, even if it's 5 minutes in the morning to like, yep. I've been meditating and at night I put my phone down and I make myself read or journal or do something that's not on my phone mm-hmm. for 5 minutes. And it literally saved my life the past 2 days. So
good for you for yeah. finding the time and really getting into your new routine.
Yes.
Seriously. But, it's important. You have yeah. to like check yourself. That's how we do it.
So thank you, Sid, for carrying the team on your back the past 2 weeks. I appreciate you.
I do what I can with a lot of to-do lists.
I appreciate you, baby.
A lot of to-do lists.
A lot of to-do lists. We can attest to that one. This hey, girl.
You got to keep people on the
Jackson,
track.
Jackson's laughing. She's like, hey, Jackson, here's your list. Blah, 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 blah.
Listen.
They have.
Ben just came in the door. I'm a to-do list freak. Listen, it's up here and it needs to go somewhere else yep. and we need to do it. So yep. anyway, really quick, my straight canon moment. I actually just found out this was my straight canon moment the other day. Let me just preface this. So I put some of my winter stuff at home. I'm lucky enough that my family lives in Minnesota. So I sent my scarves and my hats and my cozy things home in a little bin that I have. Oh, my little, I have like a little bin because I keep it all there in my room, whatever. Yeah. And I realized I'm like, I only had one blanket on the top. I'm like, send it home. So I put it in my mom's car and I sent it on home with her and yada, yada, yada. And I'm sitting here the other day and I'm thinking, you know, and I'm feeling a little spicy, whatever. And I realized that I had purchased, which you'll remember, a vibrating little friend. And by little, I don't mean little at all. A very large vibrating friend that was very intimidating and very scary. And I remember that I put it in the bin with my scarves and my hats. And my mom had sent a photo of her using the bin as a blanket thing. And that means that any minute now, she will be looking through the pile of scarves and hats and find a vibrating friend that has a butterfly on it. It's bright pink and it's very
cute.
Large.
It
okay?
It's cute.
Did Thank you,
name-
you.
Did you name it?
No, I hid it because it was scary. So anyway...
I thought you were going to say
like
you're
red because I'm just, yeah.
I okay. thought you were going to say your mom sent you a photo of the vibrator, which
she probably pretended she didn't see it.
Which would have been savage. She just says nothing along with the text.
Just this.
Just a picture
oh my
of
God.
The big pink butterfly big
Scariness.
Boy.
Scary, scary. I don't know.
Big boy. Adam, are you uncomfortable?
Adam's like, the hell is that?
He looked away.
He looked away.
He's like,
he can't
I'm
look.
Over this.
Anywho, that's my straight canon moment. Just being real with you guys, that happens. Oh, fuck. Okay, pray for me. Anywho, we started this episode super light and high energy because that's who we are as people. But really, this episode is very, it's dark at times. It's very heavy. It's intense. There's many, many trigger warnings within this episode. This is a trigger warning for anybody listening about suicide and addiction and loss and, you know, traumatic events.
Violence. Yeah.
Any like many things that maybe your ears don't need to hear right now if you're not comfortable with that and you're not ready for it. So this is a trigger warning. Chase and John were on and it was heavy and it was beautiful at the same time
yeah,
in the end.
That was that's a really good wrap up of it is... It was heavy, but at the same time, it was like I've never seen such a true love of those two, but
oh
also
God.
The vulnerability between them and what they shared with us was just amazing. So
something we wouldn't have access to without having other people share the platform with us. Really, you guys, like, we are, you know, straight candid. We're real and we have fun. And we, you know, like, we talk about taboo things and we're crazy and we're also real. But we are sharing our platform, like, especially in the coming episodes, with people that need to have their voices and their stories heard and that maybe are underrepresented. And this is something that I think a lot of people need to hear. And whether it be, it's a lot about addiction. There's HIV, there's different things. You'll just have to listen for yourself. But if you're out there and you need to hear this and you also maybe need help or somebody you know needs help, please get that help. Please reach out to your friends and family and be there for those people. So trigger warning, there's a lot in this, but if you can listen and stay and listen, it's worth your ears.
It's definitely worth it to the end.
Yeah.
And you guys know, like, we'll have an episode next week with Justin and I, right? No guests next week. Topics, they vary. So this one, like she said, is a little more heavy. We hope you guys enjoy and give us your feedback. But without further ado, I think we're ready for them.
I think we're ready for Chase and John.
Bring them on, baby. All right, we're ready to rumble. We got Chase and John in the house.
They're here. Welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for finding my little house on the block. I'm out front. You'll see me.
Yeah, I was out there waving, and all of a sudden I heard a cat call, and I'm like, excuse me. And then I see Chase walking down the street. Hey, Chase, boy, what's up? All right, you two. Let's just get the voices differentiating here. So, Chase, say your name, who you are, how old you are.
Just a little background.
Like a little mini, like your elevator pitch. Like a social security number.
Okay, sounds good. 47, just kidding. My name is Chase. I went to high school with Sophie. I went to the University of Minnesota, graduated with a biology degree.
Go Gophs, sorry, just saying.
Yes. I do HR now, and I'm sober.
Amazing.
Love it. I like the end, period.
Thanks,
period.
Chase. I'm John. Went to Hopkins High School, did not complete, have not gone to college. I too am sober, and I work in a restaurant right now.
That's amazing. What restaurant?
The Lowry on Hennepin.
Oh, a really good restaurant.
The Lowry.
Oh, yeah. You didn't add that in there, like a really good restaurant.
Yeah, come get mimosa flights.
Oh my God. Okay, fine.
Okay, fine. We'll be there. Okay.
Yeah, I won't be drinking them, but I'll serve you them.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Everyone's laughing. Stop laughing. No.
Now we have to. So obviously, Chase and John, they're here to talk about addiction, and they're both sober. And before the episode, they were a little nervous, right? Like, and sometimes we offer our guests a shot or maybe a drink, and Sid accidentally offers them a shot, and there's a good 20 seconds of silence.
I was thinking comfortability. I was like, okay, what do we usually do? Yeah. I felt,
she was,
and then I was like,
oh
my God. And my eyes got wide. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm like, no.
That's a good segue though.
But it's a good segue because why you're here, literally, to talk about who you are as people, who you've become, and to talk about also your background in addiction, a few other pieces that you guys had brought up that we were like, oh my God. We want to make sure that we're giving everybody, every group of people, whether that's who you are, whether that's an experience you've been through, a platform and a space to talk about it. So because everybody out there has something and someone's going to relate to your story.
Yeah.
And we were like wowed by your story. Sophie and Chase knew each other in high school, right? That's how you met. Yep.
Yes.
We go way back. What was it? Eighth grade biology? Ninth grade?
Tenth grade.
We became BFFs in biology class.
Yes,
Chase made fun of me for how many questions I asked because I'm the girl in the front row like, hands up.
Oh, that's totally. And you're a biology major, you said.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're like, you already knew what you were doing. You're like, this bitch.
Chase was a smarty pants.
That's amazing.
Smarty. Okay. So before we even get started, how are you two? How do you two know each other?
Ooh, give us a date.
Oh, so this is a fun story. So
it's a wonderful story.
When Chase was still at the U and still in college, we both had a run-in at a sober house. So I was 18. It was my first time getting sober. I had just left my first treatment. I moved into the sober house, and about 2 weeks after I moved in, Chase moved in. He had a girlfriend at the time.
I had
the biggest crush on him. I literally had the biggest crush on him ever. He used to drive me to outpatient treatment, and I'd tell all my little treatment friends about this super cute guy that lived in my house. I was like obsessed. And then of course, 2 weeks later, I get kicked out. And then don't hear from him for like 3 years until
So you went 3 years without talking to each other?
Yes. So like a little over a year ago, I get a message on a gay app, and it's like a body picture, a nice body. And it's just like a message.
I hate that detail.
It's a message that says, I know you. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, so it was just your body and he knew who it was?
No, it was just, I mean, I wasn't out of the closet.
That is a freaking pickup line though.
Hold on. Yeah. What'd you say?
I was not out of the closet. Oh, so I was not about to put my face there.
Oh, so you were kind of saving your privacy right there.
Yep.
Got it, being sneaky.
And you recognized him from just his body picture.
No, I was like, he messaged me and he was like, I know you. And I'm like, oh, well, like, bet, okay. Who are you?
Sorry.
Yeah. So we sent the face picture and I was like, mind you, like, I'm using it this time, I'm unwell. And he sent me the face picture and like, I don't remember like a whole bunch of like that whole time in my life. That was kind of like a blurry point, but like, I just remember the one thing. If there's one thing I remember about that day, it's like how happy I was when I got that face picture, when he sent me the message and like realized that he was reaching out to me.
Okay. Like, I'm going to cry.
But he had lied to me and he was using. So when I went over there, when I left, I blocked him immediately.
You had to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think now that we know how you know each other, let's rewind it back a little bit. And Chase, we'll start with you. Just kind of your history with addiction and maybe how it started, and share as much to as little detail. This, the floor is yours. And I think this story is going to be powerful. So just take it away. And wherever this is for you. This is for you. So
all right.
Wherever your story starts, we're here. Oh, we're listening.
So it goes, well, I mean, it goes back to like high school, right? Like you remember in high school, I just like, from the first time I drank, my friends had to call my parents and they had to meet them halfway. And one of my friends had to like carry me out of their car and put me in the back of my parents' car. And then they drove me the rest of the way home. And I remember like waking or coming to at the kitchen table and I'm just like crying and they were pissed. And then it was
Abby,
like,
your dad scare me, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I mean, there was some consequences, right? But it was like a long time ago and it really didn't, you know, stop me. And then there was a time, really like no consequences until it was like uncomfortable enough for me was enough. So like I had a couple of minors. I got taken to detox one night on the way home from a bar at the U. And I was like, I want to leave. Like I blew a 0.28 or something. And I was like, I remember everything. And I was like, I want to go home. And they're like, no. And then they shot some sedative in my butt. And then like the next day I was so out of it.
Oh, wow.
Like I was just, I could not even like keep my eyes open. I don't even remember calling my roommates, but they picked me up and I was like sitting outside of the hospital and they like brought me home or whatever. And then, what was it? September of 2016 is when I started using drugs.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's, we help you save.
And by New Year's of that year, so New Year's 2017, I was in the hospital. And I was really sick. I was like throwing up, super dehydrated. They couldn't even get an IV in me. At this point, I was like 128 pounds.
Yeah, is this the picture you showed me one time?
Yeah.
You were just really skinny. And
yeah, where it's like all collarbones. Yes. And
So it started for you. You knew you kind of had some sort of obsession with drugs or alcohol, because it started with the alcohol and you just got drunk a lot? Or is that it kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember ever not drinking and blacking out.
Okay.
Like,
okay,
I could probably count on two hands.
Yeah.
And like, I have, you know, roommates who can vouch for that. It was always in excess.
Could I ask a question, even though I'm like, I want you to continue the story, but that's kind of a part of it where we added a point.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it that like drugs became okay? Because like at one point I can remember when alcohol became okay in my mind, you know what I mean? And then weed became okay.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point cocaine was okay for like 2 seconds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, why do you have any idea of why that like it kind of went from the drinking and then you know, welcome drugs in, and however much or little you want to share, or if you have an idea?
Yeah, I don't know, but I remember making those jokes, right? Like, you know, I'll never do this. I'll never do this. And then I like found myself literally doing that.
Yeah.
And it was just always like rationalization. It was like, I think a little bit of it was like, you know, like a willingness to experiment and just try different things. But like a lot of it was just, I was really uncomfortable, you know? And like, I mean, I came out about a year ago.
Did you that know. Uncomfortability come with because of the fact that you were gay and you didn't, and you weren't out of the closet yet, or where, what was the uncomfortableness coming from, do you think?
I think that was part of it.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because mm-hmm. I think that was part of the segue into the drugs, mm-hmm. because there's such a bad, like the drugs in the gay community with sex and like everything is so, so bad.
I didn't know that.
See, yeah. This is when we were prepping for this episode a little bit. She gave me just a little detail, like, because I didn't want to know much at all, but I mm-hmm. had no idea. Like, we really both were like, wow, I had no idea that was a part of the community in a part of that community. You know what I mean? Like a percent of a percent.
Yeah. And again, like, I guess I know a pretty niche community. Obviously, like, people I used with and then people who are now sober mm-hmm. and, like, their experiences. But it's a lot, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
A lot of that. Well, pick up wherever you left off in that mm-hmm. one point. Like, so now you're through detox and it's, you're yep. waking up in the hospital and you're using drugs at yep. this rate. Like what happens from here?
Yeah. I mean, it was like when I left detox, you know, it was, I mean, I don't ever remember even thinking like, wow, I need to slow down. Like never crossed my mind. It was just like, wow, this sucks. Slept it off. And like my grade suffered. I almost got kicked out of the U twice.
Holy for crap. And my you're GPA. Smart.
Yeah. I mean, when I apply myself, yeah.
When you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but then like fast forward to September 2016 was when I started like using hard drugs. And then New Year's 2017, I was in the hospital. And that was when I was like 128 pounds and I was super sick. And they had like no idea. And I ended up having an intestinal parasite is what they ended up like figuring out. But it's like something that most people can get and their body fights it off. Okay. And so that's when they started like doing some tests for HIV, because it's mm-hmm. only people who have like a compromised immune system. And I remember like the doctor came back and he asked my parents to leave the room. And I was like,
oh, God.
Like we've been sitting here like talking about everything this whole time, like everything. And he asked them to leave. And then he told me and
told you
that I have HIV.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like 3 questions they ask in the hospital. They ask you if you have been sleeping with sex workers. They ask you if you're gay or if you use IV drugs. And I just denied everything. And like, there's no logic, right? Like, there's no other way. It's not coming from a toilet seat. Like,
you're not fooling me. Yeah. Yeah.
He knew, but I just denied everything. So
why do you think you denied? You didn't want help yet?
Yeah, I mean I didn't want help. I didn't want to stop using drugs. I also wasn't ready to come out.
Yep.
Especially I think
with your parents the other side of the room.
Yep, and I didn't want to like have to deal with like the stigma around that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like HIV was going to be bad enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did for like a really long time, is I told everybody it was like from the drugs, like I that was like my line, you know, because I again still wasn't out.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there were certain people that I had to tell, and then like I was pretty open with like friends, and so I told people and that is like what I stuck to. Like, truthfully, I don't know how I got it. It could have been drugs. It could have been like sex. I don't know. But like, that was like, even then, it's like I have the diagnoses and I'm still holding on to like, lying to myself, telling myself that it's like, oh, I got it this way, so then I'll feel better, you know? And so that was 3 months into me, you know, using IV drugs. And then I was only using for about a year.
Okay.
And then, so September 2017, and then I was in treatment.
Really? How did you get to treatment?
Oh, I was really miserable. Like, I was finally uncomfortable enough with it myself. Like, I was going to bed every single night and like wanting to die, but being too afraid to like do anything about it, you know? So it's just like a really like shitty place to be.
Would you say this was probably the rock bottom then before you went to treatment? Or do you have a different rock bottom?
No, I would say that like to get to treatment, that was my rock bottom, right? But I think I think we always, like, in order to grow, we have to hit like different bottoms in different areas. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, with specific behaviors, it's like, oh, okay, like I'm uncomfortable with this, and then you grow. So it was like with the drugs and alcohol, like that was kind of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And before we get into the treatment, can we go back to like what it felt like and the feeling you had when the doctor told you about HIV? And I also want to like destigmatize parts of HIV that I know you told me about when we met for coffee the other day, just because I think it's an important conversation to have. And I was unknowledgeable about the subject. So if you can share some HIV facts and kind of how you felt and how you transitioned into accepting that, I think it'd be really helpful.
Yeah. So when I was told, I don't think there was really, like I wasn't surprised. Right. And I think that's kind of what scared my parents, because I didn't really react. Like I knew everything that was going on. I knew how high risk. So I wasn't really surprised. And they're like, you know, I was working at a group home for adults with autism at the time. And my dad doesn't know a lot about like medicine. And he was like, you're going to have to quit your job. Is autism contagious? And I was like, no, like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Like he does. Yeah. They don't know anything about like any of that. Mm-hmm. Right. So like that was their first thought, is like, they're obviously coming from like a parent's point of view, and they're like super worried, like, you know, like, what do we have to do to keep you healthy?
Well, you know, like that was supportive though. That had to feel good too. That no matter what, they were just like, they were there. They were like, we just want you healthy.
Yeah. And they also didn't ask a lot of questions. Right. You know, they weren't like trying to get down to like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
Because like it happened somehow and I wasn't telling anybody. So like they could have pushed and been like, you know, are you gay? Are you using drugs? Like they could have really pushed, and it was just like we all just kind of accepted it and moved forward, which was great at the time. But I think it kept me comfortable in like the denial.
Yes.
Like, because like nobody was talking about it. It was just like, okay, let's like move forward and just, this is the new reality. We won't talk about it. But it's like, how political can I get on here?
You
can
as political go, as you want.
Whatever you want to do, you can go there. We want your story supported, and we want destigmatization of this.
Yeah.
And I have to say, even when I was in school, I can remember fifth, probably grade, it was used talking about HIV and AIDS jointed together.
Yeah.
One. And two, it was used as a scare tactic to not have unprotected sex. I remember that. And I was like, and like, I've met great somebody point. With HIV before too. Like, it's common. Like it's more common than anybody thinks. And I'm not going to steal your thunder or your story, but I just had to throw that out there because I think that supports like what you want to say and what you want to tell.
Yeah. So I think it's like similar with addiction, right? It was like back in the '80s or whatever, it was like the war on drugs. When it was like crack cocaine, it was like, that was the war on drugs. And then all of a sudden it's like opiates are coming in. Right. And there's like the opioid crisis, and it's an epidemic, right? It's like a war when it's on like crack cocaine and the people that use crack cocaine, and then when it's like, you know, the white kids that are like addicted to painkillers after getting them with like a sports injury, it's like now it's an epidemic, like it's a disease, it's like it changes. And that's the thing, it's like looking this last year, like how quickly they were able to like come up with a vaccine, right? It's like when everybody is affected, but when it's like, you know, primarily like people of color and gay people that are like being affected by this is like, there's not like the resources. There's not like, nobody's doing anything about it. You know,
Preach. We've known about it for so long and nobody's acting.
Right. You know, and it's like until it starts affecting like the children of the politicians and like the people with the money and the influence, it's like,
I have goosebumps.
Like nothing's going to happen, you yeah. know? And I know I think they are going to like clinical trials for a vaccine from the COVID-19, like vaccine research. So there's like things happening, but it's like, we're quite capable of like, if we want to like, you know, mm-hmm. come up with these things, if we want to put the resources there, like we can do it. It's just like, they don't want to, you know? Man. And it's just like how it's talked about, right? It's just like, it's crazy.
Is there a big community that you're a part of with HIV? And like, how did that come about? Because you just got diagnosed. Now what? You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, I mean, my parents were like, oh, you should like join a support group or something. And I was just like ready to forget all about it. It's like, I'll take my medication and we're just going to pretend it never happened. And that's kind of what I did. And I have not, I mean, this is like my first and like biggest platform, like talking about this on.
Thank you for sharing. Like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, like a lot of my friends know, my family knows and all of this. But there's, you know, I've just never like openly talked about it. I've never like embraced like that part of the gay community either. And like granted, like I haven't, you know, been out for super long, yeah. like just a year. But yeah, it's like there's, I think outside of the gay community, it's like really scary how quickly like the misinformation about HIV spreads. It's like, I think gay people are like pretty good at like, you know, understanding like the risk and what it means to be like medicated and undetectable. And like,
can you share that just with the listeners? So like, what are some of the misinformations that is being spread about and what debunks it, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think like, so like the reason it's like seen as like a gay drug, right? Or not drug, a gay disease yeah. is because of just like how it spread. Like it's just like the mode of transmission, you know? And so it's like for women to women, it's the least okay, like, okay. you know, so there's like statistics where it's like somebody untreated in their lifetime, like a woman would give it to another person like once every 7 years. Okay. And then like, you know, a man would give it to a woman once every 5 years, but then men to men and the way like men have sex and anal sex, it's like it happens much quicker. So it's yeah. like every 3 years. So then it's like men and men. And it's like, it kind of, you can just see how it like progresses through that community way quicker than it's going yeah. to with like men and women or. Mm-hmm. Women. Yeah. So.
Makes sense.
What does it actually like entail? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like what is that? Because I think that's what people are curious. They're like, cause we, like I said, I was scared away from it almost. Like they're like, oh, don't have unprotected sex. Like you could get it, which you just debunked and like how you could, but what's it actually entail having it?
And the medication, what does that do? Are you and John able to still get jiggy with it? Like jiggy give us,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes.
Those are like, the types of things, the yeah. debunkers, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
So I feel like part of the misinformation or like the lack of understanding is that like if you have HIV, like the medication and like what it means to be undetectable isn't really talked about. So like what that means is if you take your antiretrovirals, whether it's one, whether it's two, whether it's three, whatever regimen your doctor has you on, and you take it consistently for a period of time, your viral load will then get to a place where like it's not detectable in your bloodstream. And once you reach an undetectable place, you cannot transmit it through sex, like at all. It's not like approved. Like, I mean, they haven't studied enough with like IV drug use. So like, let's say like Chase was using and like I used whatever he used and like the mode of transportation was there. He wasn't taking his meds or he was taking his meds. I mean, yeah, whatever. It's not studied like with transmission through IV drugs. But
so if he takes the medicine, you can still be diagnosed with HIV, but it's impossible to transfer it because it's keeping those blood cells in check.
Extremely sex, unlikely. Yes. But you can't say impossible because it's like they say they'd say tested, but it's impossible. It's impossible,
so
right?
They actually did the CDC like 6 years ago or something like came out and said like an undetectable viral load, which basically means like the number of copies in the virus per millimeter of blood is like not able to be detected by like okay. what we have for like okay. scientific testing, right? So when I went into the hospital, Mine was like 3 million copies per milliliter, like when I was like in the hospital at my sickest.
Yes.
And now it's like I've been undetectable for years. And like amazing. The testing is like less than 20. Amazing. So from 3 amazing. Million to less than 20. And so the CDC said, like, once you are there, it is untransmittable. Like, it is impossible to spread it through sex. And then I even heard one of my doctors said, he said, what's interesting is you have a higher risk of getting HIV from, like, sleeping with a partner who hasn't recently been tested than you do with sleeping with somebody who is HIV positive and on medication. Because at least the person you know, wow. they're HIV positive and they can't spread it because they're medicated. But the tiny, 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 like, chance that the person you're sleeping with has got it since they were last tested and sleeping with you is higher. The risk is zero.
Wow. It's zero.
The risk is zero. Yeah.
Wow. See, that's what I was trying to
get at.
That's
what we want to know.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Wow.
It is amazing.
Well, in health.
Thank God for medication, right?
Seriously.
Swear.
Yeah.
Swear.
And as far as health wise, we won't like dig and bug you and pry with all these questions, but health wise, how is your health? You know what I mean? Because that's what we don't. I mean, I don't know enough either. I'm not as educated in it. What?
I love the whole time that Chase has been sharing his story.
What?
John has been rubbing his back, like supporting him and grabbing his knee, and it makes me want to cry.
Okay. I know, I'm like, their
How's
love
your
is
health,
so
Chase?
Obvious.
Okay. And then we'll finish up with your treatment story, and then we'll get to you, John. Okay.
Yeah, we're coming, John. Don't worry.
We're so coming rush. For you. No rush.
It's pretty normal. Like, you know, there's a little bit of a higher risk, like with COVID, you know, I was working from home because it's just like, you know, there is a little bit of a higher risk. I've been like typically more prone to like things like pneumonia, like where people don't really get that.
Yeah.
You know, but like I've gotten it a few times, but it's like it's nothing major. You know, it's like I'm pretty healthy. Yeah. And it all really like the way it works, right, is like there's the number of copies in your blood, and then what it attacks is like your CD4 cells, which are basically like your immune cells. And so that number is what like gets low, and that's why you get more sick. And so you get below, I think it's what, 200?
Yeah, below 200, and then you have AIDS.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the difference, is just how weakened like your immune system has become, how much the virus has done in like attacking your CD4 cells.
Man. And like you can reach an AIDS diagnosis, like you can have under 200 units and then, you know, become undetectable. You can get on medication, but at that point, like still you have an AIDS diagnosis for the rest of your life. Like
right.
Once you hit AIDS, you're never just going to be HIV positive again.
Man.
Which is weird because the CD4 cells can go back above 200.
But then you still have that diagnosis?
If they've ever been below 200, it's considered AIDS.
Whoa, that's interesting to me.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah, wow.
We're learning some science-y things here.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Yeah, that's what's behind it. That's what it is.
Okay, so moving on with your treatment. So now you're in treatment. Did you go to an what is it?
Inpatient.
Rehab.
Yes.
There we go.
What were you trying to say? Infrastructure?
That was like an in-person, inpatient. There
inpatient.
It was.
Yes, oh, yes, yes.
Inpatient, outpatient. It came to my tip of my tongue there. So go on to that and like what was rehab like and day-to-day there?
We were actually, so when he was in the sober house like 2 weeks before me because he had just gotten out of where I was an inpatient. And so like we just missed each other in inpatient. And then we lived together for a short time at the sober house. And then he was back in inpatient again, like right after. Yeah. So I went down to a place in Owatonna and I was there for 28 days, I think. And
that's a long time, actually.
At this point, your parents knew.
Yes.
And your girlfriend knew.
That I was using drugs,
and
yes.
And they were using drugs of some sort. Okay.
Yep. So I went and saw a counselor at the U, the person that actually had to do my chemical health assessment after I went to detox because I was picked up by like the University of Minnesota police. And so I had to like do all that. And obviously when I did the chemical health assessment, I like lied to her and she's like, oh, he's fine. This is like a fluke. He just drank too much that night. So then I come like, you know, crawling back with my tail between my legs to her. And I'm like, actually I have a huge problem. And I'm like, you know,
so
I need
you
help.
Admitted this.
Yes.
You were like, you were ready to admit. Then you were like, I actually need to get some support because I can't do this on my own.
Yep. And so I saw her on. So I told the person I was dating at the time, I think on a Tuesday. My parents came down on Thursday and we like all talked with the counselor. And then I was in inpatient by Saturday. So it all happened in like five days.
Wow.
And so I mean, inpatient treatment is quite a bit different. The one I went to was, I mean, there was like horses and shit.
Wait, what?
I was waiting for you to say that.
Because you were like, there's something funny. I'm like, what is it?
He goes, they wanted me to pet horses. And I would just, what was your excuse?
I tried telling him that I was allergic to horses.
No one would know that unless you had a horse. Like, have you had a horse? You're like, no.
Yeah. And they're like, we don't believe you.
Yeah.
Like, wait.
So yeah. They make you go pet horses?
Yeah. And it was like the longest. So like your day's very structured and you have like different classes and things. And it was 2 hours.
The longest.
You guys both can talk about this, actually. I want to hear
it was
both
so
your
stupid.
Experience.
Like,
both there.
Yeah. Like, no, they'd ask you like, how do you think the horse is feeling right now? Like, why do you think the horse is eating grass? Like, it's literally hungry. Like,
it was weird.
What were they trying to reprogram, I wonder? But I mean,
I think they're trying to like have you project.
Oh, project emotion and action, maybe?
Like, it's literally just a horse.
Yeah, but I don't, I mean, it's like, it's it probably man. Could have worked, but I was so sick of it and I was just not having it. And so, but that's, yeah.
So what was helpful in those inpatient rehab programs? Like, did you meet with different counselors throughout the day? Did you have an alarm clock? Did y'all eat breakfast together? Like, I'm just curious.
I'm always asking like, why is it that you stopped? Because you stopped and you went to rehab and you got that help. Like, why?
He did. He stopped at that one.
At that one.
For
okay,
a period of time.
The specific one. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's get to that.
Go ahead.
No.
What made you stop?
What made... No, we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that later.
I already know where that's going. I can tell. And that literally makes my hair pitter patter. Okay.
So I guess it was just... It's nice to be away. Like, you were separated, right? You're separated from the drugs and alcohol. So that was helpful because there was many times that I tried to stop using drugs on my own. Like, I realized it was a problem long before, like, I ever sought help. And I just couldn't stop. And then I could stop, like, the drugs for a little bit. But the second I drank, like, then it was drugs too. And I was never able to, like, convince myself that, like, alcohol was also a problem. Okay. You know, even though that's exactly what it led to and I knew it was going to.
So I have a question that a listener wrote in. That's a question for both of you, kind of relating to that. So do you think that it does have to be like black and white? You cut out all substances, or do you think that people can eventually find a balance with other substance in the future?
So I think that's like a really individualized question. I think there's like, I mean, for me and understanding the way I use substances that like I just need to soothe something that I feel is like wrong with me, like because that's why I'm using, like I feel like I'm not good enough or there's something inside me that like feels uncomfortable, so like that's typically why I'm using. And like with that knowledge and like understanding of like this is why I'm using, whatever substance I pick up, no matter how long it is, I mean it's going to lead right back to the pattern of use that I was using. It's like, I mean, there could be people that just like drink in excess for a little bit, take some time off, and then like pick it back up. But like, who am I to say like that their drinking is alcoholic? Mm-hmm. I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, I liked how you answered that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. What do you think, Chase?
I can't.
Yeah.
I know I can't because I've tried.
Yeah.
And I would say, in my experience, you know, people are using substances for something. So even if you can use in like not excess, you know, why are you going back to something? You know, so let's say somebody was like using drugs and alcohol, they go to treatment and now, you know, they're just smoking weed, but it's constantly, but they're not really seeing, you know, consequences. And so, you know, they just do that for a long period of time. And it's like you were using the drugs and alcohol to soothe something, like obviously, you know, people don't just use drugs and alcohol. And I think it's really hard once you admit you have a problem to ever like take that back, right? So like you go to get help and then it's like, you know, everybody knows and you've sought help and now it's like you can't just say, actually, I don't have a problem. And for me, it's like really uncomfortable too, because once I said like I had a problem, then it was like there was guilt every time I thought about it. Or when I like relapsed and was using drugs and alcohol, like there was a lot of guilt that I had never felt before.
Man,
because I never like tried to stop. But once I like made that common knowledge, and it's like anytime I used again, it was just like very uncomfortable.
How many times did you relapse?
So I started smoking weed right when I got out of outpatient, and then I started I started drinking again at a wedding, and it was like 2 weeks after that I was back to drugs so fast.
So it got you there quickly. Yeah. You started using or like using any sort of thing that you were addicted to.
Yeah. And I knew that, you know, I knew that, but I still convinced myself like, okay, I can smoke weed. And then it was like, drinking's okay. Like eventually I got to the point where drinking was like going to be okay. And it wasn't, you know, and that lasted probably about 2 months and then I was sober again. And I was, I've not used drugs and alcohol for a really long time, but I was on some prescriptions, you know, some anti-anxiety, antidepressants. And, you know, for like the first year and a half, really like the first 2 years of my sobriety, like I was using those in excess, you know, like I was taking multiple. And, you know, when I say like in excess, I mean like I'm prescribed 2 and I take a handful of 30.
Right.
You know, and it's because I'm still so uncomfortable. And like this whole time, I'm not out of the closet still, right? Like I am free of the drugs and alcohol, you know, now. And, you know, I'm still not out. I'm still not comfortable with myself. I'm still not being honest to anybody,
you know. Still stuck with you.
Yeah.
Which is like the hardest part.
Which is what you were feeling.
It's like you're stuck. It's the hardest part.
It's like you're stuck in your own skin.
Yes.
So what made you decide to come out and how did that feel?
Tell them, Chase.
So.
without leading into what we'll talk about later.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe do you want to talk about his story? Because that kind of overlaps first.
We'll
before.
Pause there then.
Yes.
Yeah, and because then, if it comes back. Yep. John, we need to hear from
gonna
you.
It's going to come back around. Hi, John. Welcome back.
Hi.
To Straight Candy Podcast with Sid and Soap.
Well.
Hi.
Ask me questions.
Okay. Well, first of all, I had 3 questions, but I kept holding them because I'm like, I want to get to John's story too.
Sorry.
No, I was like, that's why I'm like, so.
Oh, that's why you were tapping me. You're like, Sophie, shut up. Let's get to John.
Usually we try to go every other just, but I'm like, you had a lot of really good ones that I wanted to ask too. So anywho, doesn't matter. John, I have a question for you before we even like jump into your story because it's a part of your story.
Okay.
Do you think that you would have stopped using at the times you did if you didn't get caught?
Absolutely not.
No.
No chance.
Okay.
Nope.
No chance.
So that's the one question. And the other question is, maybe I'll let you get your story in because this will come a little towards the end because it's about friends and family and support. So because it's a lot of listeners asked a specific question. So I want to hear your story. You take it away from whatever part you want to start at and we'll get to the how you two met and all that jazz too.
Sounds good because that's like the best part of the story.
I know. That's what I'm waiting for.
Wait, listeners, like, wait around.
Sweet. Okay. So again, I'm John. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Thank you for coming.
We'll start way back at the beginning in my childhood. So I grew up with both parents as alcoholics. My dad was a crack addict. My mom was an alcoholic. She had 20 plus years of recovery later. But my mom and dad got divorced when I was 18 months. My dad was like sleeping with sex workers and smoking crack and like not like he wasn't good to me or not even me. He wasn't good to my mom or really anybody. He was a really sick guy. So my mom took me, one of the dogs, because we had 2 dogs. We had like this beautiful house on Medicine Lake in Plymouth with the boat and the 4-wheelers and all that stuff. So she basically just like packed a backpack, took me and a dog and found this little place in St. Louis Park where we were at for a little bit. So how that looked is like when my mom left, she took full custody of me, like knowing that my dad was in active addiction and like unwell. She had to bear the full responsibility of like being a single mother with also owning a business, working full time. And then like finding a place to live with a toddler and a dog, you know? So right around my 2nd birthday, my stepdad came into my life. My mom got this beautiful house in Golden Valley, which is where I ended up growing up. And the day after my 2nd birthday, my mom and stepdad met each other. He was moving into the house that she was moving out of to move to Golden Valley. And then we ended up becoming a blended family. But in the meantime, my dad was getting like supervised visitation because there were court documents drawn up because of the behaviors he was exhibiting. Like moving further down the line, my dad was very like in and out of recovery. Like he'd get sober for a little bit, you know, collect some sober time. And then, you know, it would just all fall away. It would just crumble to pieces, which is like kind of like foreshadowing what it's going to look like for me. Cause like yeah, that's kind of my experience too. Like, I wish it was just like a one and done type thing. Yeah. I wish I could have like learned from that experience. And like, you'd think, you know, growing up, like seeing how devastating addiction can be to a family, like that would be like off-putting. And like, I remember for a certain time, like all through middle school, like it was, right? Like, I'd be like, no, like drugs are a no, never.
So you knew what was going on with your dad?
Or I mean, like with my father, I didn't actively know, you know, I could only kind of piece it together, but we'll get, I mean, like, I don't know how deep you want me to dive into some of this stuff, but like, I mean, there were some terrible things happening. Like, my mom has a story where like, she like watched my dad light his face on fire with a blowtorch trying to smoke crack. Like, I mean, like it craziness, right? Like, wow. I mean, and stuff like this, like, when I say that, like, I see your faces, like, this, like, it doesn't even, like, feel like it's that crazy for me sharing that, because, like, this is, like, the lifestyle that, like, I know, and, like, these are similar to the things that, like, I would find as normal in my active addiction. That's what my 21 years of life so far has looked like. Like, right, like, oh, like, lighting your face on fire with a blowtorch, that's normal. Like, that's nothing. That's, like, Tuesday.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm not even going to, I don't have anything.
Our eyeballs, like, no, our comment. Eyeballs said it all. We both just went
like shocked, like just shocked. And I'm sorry that that was your reality. And I'm, but
don't be sorry. Cause like, you know, if I didn't have these experiences, I probably wouldn't be the person who I am today. And like, for the most part, like I kind of like who I am.
You should.
And like, it takes some trials and tribulations to like, the grass is always greener, right? Mm-hmm. Like I go through these struggles and like, maybe in me saying something like this on this podcast, somebody, one of the viewers will like have a similar experience and like me sharing like how I overcame all of this can be helpful.
100%.
That's why we share the platform with other people and people like you, because that's what we want. Or, and it might not be them. It might be a sibling or a best friend or a distant friend or a relative or a parent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's for everybody. And, but continue wherever you want to continue, because
so we'll fast forward a little bit, we'll like move up to like elementary school times, and like that's when like I really started to realize that like maybe I wasn't like everybody else, in the sense that there was this second grader in my class. He had a little bowl cut and I just thought he was like the cutest thing in the world. I'm like,
oh, I love it. Had
like the crush. the biggest crush
on the bowl cut, boy.
The bowl cut. We loved a bowl cut. I had a bowl cut too.
We loved a good bowl cut.
Not at that time.
Sid definitely had a bowl cut.
You would have a crush on me, that's for freaking sure.
Maybe not.
She looked like a boy.
I was mistaken many times by my gender. I'm not kidding. Oh, yeah.
An androgynous queen.
Us, honey.
No, so like fast forwarding, like I enter middle school, you know, complete elementary school. I start middle school. Like I'm a pretty good student. Like, I mean, like I'm by no means like a biology major at the, like the U, like straight A's. Like I didn't get a scholarship out of high school. No, but like for like seventh and eighth grade, because I went to Hopkins, which is like seventh through ninth grade is middle school. But like technically ninth grade is still freshman year of high school. And then 10th through 12th grade is high school. So seventh and eighth grade, I did pretty well. Like I was on the B honor roll for those years. Like I thought I did something. And then like ninth grade comes around, and the first day of ninth grade, well, I'll mention I like wasn't hanging around with like the most normal kids, right? Like, I mean, like I found like I thought I was like a scene kid.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I was seen.
I'm gonna go what?
A scene kid.
What does that mean?
Like, rawr, XD.
Oh,
like the scene.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
I was
it.
Actually kind of confused too.
No, I was with the scene queens.
Queens.
So, first day of freshman year, which, mind you, from my experience, is still middle school. I'm on the bus going home, and my friends ask me like if I want to go hang with Mary Jane. I'm like, oh, who's that? Like Mary Jane.
Like ninth grade.
I haven't met her.
No idea.
Yeah, no idea. So they get off the bus. I like I realized I'm going to smoke weed for the first time.
Oh, I didn't know what that was. Okay, I get it.
Scene queen over here.
Like, I was literally waiting. I was waiting for a person named Mary Jane.
Sartell okay. moment.
So 14 and like, 26. Oh, you find out.
Yeah, I guess I figured out when I'm 26, Mary Jane is a code word for weed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You didn't right. actually know
no,
this?
No, I did not. Nope.
Okay, continue.
That's so, like, awkward. I smoked weed for the first time that day, and like, I remember a lot of people say like, oh, like I didn't feel weed the first time I smoked it, but like I felt it. And like, from like the first time I smoked weed, I was like, oh, like this is an issue. Like this is a problem. Mm-hmm. Cause like, I mean, like at that point, like I wasn't out, I'm a freshman in high school. Very uncomfortable with myself, like always wanting to please everybody, like constantly needing, like searching for validation, which I mean, like is still true. Like I love validation. regardless, yeah, I knew it was going to be a problem. And then like that same year I tried alcohol, I drank for the first time. And like, I mean, that was problematic by the end of my freshman year. Well, we'll not go that far. So like middle of my freshman year of high school, I had like this really long swoopy hair. I thought it was it. I also had like
the way he said it.
I know
this really long swoopy hair.
Yeah, it was a moment for me. so this is kind of an interesting part of the story, like especially if we're gonna focus a little bit on like sexuality. So like I realized, or like I finally came to terms, if you could call it that, with like the fact that like I'm gay, or like I didn't like put a label on it, right? Like I knew that like somewhere in there that like I had an attraction to guys. So I drafted this tweet.
Oh gosh.
He drafted up this tweet, and I'm at my dad's house in Plymouth on the lake. So like that kind of, we'll talk about it. Maybe we'll talk about that. But I ended up just like saying like fuck it and tweeted it.
Yeah. And you then said like, I'm gay?
Yeah, I just said like, hey, like I'm gay. Like,
all right. But like, yeah. it was power
like,
move.
It was like really wordy. I mean, like it was a lot more than it needed to be.
Yeah.
Because I like to make everything like a spectacle, a show.
Yes.
All the attention has to be on me.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So I tweeted it, and like there was like, I don't know. I don't know if any other like LGBT viewers can relate to this, but like, before that tweet, and there were so many more like gay slurs. Like people would like comment on my Facebook photos in like seventh grade, be like, "Oh, like you F slur," like all that stuff. You know, like, just shaming me. But like once that tweet was posted, like those same people that like wanted to call me those names were like, "Oh, we're so proud of you." Like da da da. Like,
oh, you. I'm sorry, but okay. I mean, great that you're being positive and supportive, but be there from the beginning.
Yeah, like.
Jesus.
What is this?
Ew.
Like, yeah. What a switch up.
Bandwagon.
Yeah. Like, I love bandwagon. My fans. Thank
yeah,
you.
Thank you. Hey.
Thank you for the favorite on Twitter. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, either way, you're engaging, so.
I swear. And then, like, I came to school, and, like, I had to make some, like, super dramatic story about, like, how I posted this week. Because, like, I couldn't let people know that, like, I was finally comfortable. Because, like, that's too much. So I told them that I had, like, drafted up this tweet, and I was proofreading it. And I fell down the stairs, and my finger happened to click the tweet button.
That was your
falling.
Story.
That was my story.
You.
And I'm sticking.
High school.
I'm sticking to it. That's what happened.
All right. That's what happened. that's a true story.
That's
he
a
told
true story.
His whole class that we're gonna go with it.
We're going with it. We're rolling with it.
That's what happened. So that was my freshman year of high school. Not in the high school yet. I moved to the high school. Summer between my freshman and sophomore year, I found this really fun beach at the time. It was super underground. It was Hidden Beach. Where like, it was just like a way to access drugs. Cause like by the end of freshman year, I was like filling up, I don't know if you guys know, like the little Gatorade bottles, like you can get them at like in big 24 packs, 48
yeah.
packs
oh, yeah.
in Costco.
Yeah.
So around that time, my parents had started bringing alcohol into the house. So I would drink a Gatorade, and then I would fill the water bottle with like their Grey Goose, or the Gatorade bottle with Grey Goose, and then I'd go to middle school, and then I'd drink it with my friends before class.
Holy
during the day
shit.
Like at 7 in the morning
at school.
Oh my gosh.
Holy
yes
crap. Okay,
yeah, can like, you in imagine the hallway like us doing that?
Oh my god, Sartell would have a heyday.
Like at that, I mean, like I did what I did, right? But at that age, yeah. It was like I was terrified.
Oh, I don't need your judgment.
No judgment here. I'm not judging. I'm just like, I mean, bringing it
wow,
back
yeah.
to that age.
Okay.
Of,
yeah.
Did your parents know?
No.
So then what came next?
Because so what came next was like my first love, my first love was Xanax. So I was at Hidden Beach. It was the day after my 14th or 15th birthday. I just bought like an ounce of like mid weed, and like I went back into the woods, and like I was going to roll two joints with a friend we were going to match. And then she pulled out a bag of pills. And she had like, she had Klonopin and Xanax, and she took one of them, and I was like, oh, what'd you take? And she's like, Klonopin. And I was like, oh, can I have one? She's like, no, but you can have this one, and gave me a bar of Xanax. And she told me to chew it up. And I, so me not never having tried it, I chewed it up, and I was like, oh, this is so disgusting. So I'm like running around, like looking for something to drink. And then another girl's like, oh, I have this, and pulls out a bag of wine. So I just start guzzling. So the next thing I know, I am waking up in my bedroom. It's light out. I have no idea what happened. I don't know what day it is. I don't know if it's the same day. I don't know if it's like a day later, 3 days later. And my mom came into my, this is like the insanity of my addiction. My mom came into my room and she was like, what were you on last night? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, what were you on last night? And I was like, what happened? So I guess my,
how old were you?
I think I was 15.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Which is like super scary.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Oh my God.
So my mom then tells me that I had fallen asleep at the kitchen table with my, like with my family present, with like spaghetti hanging out of my mouth.
Oh wow.
And like the insanity part is like, I mean, like I don't remember anything. I don't remember any of it. So I'm like, oh, like I don't remember what that drug feels like. So I need to try it again.
Oh, interesting.
I can't like, because it goes back to like elementary school. Like I remember when we did like drug ed, like they showed like the acid tabs in the book. And I was like from like elementary school, I was like, I need to do that.
That's, you knew that when you were in elementary school?
Oh my
sitting,
God,
looking at
that? Absolutely. I was like, this is me. This is for me.
See, that was one of my questions too, is like, why? Like, why did it seem okay? You know what I mean? Like, why? You know, like, but you were, it was more in your mind, it was a curiosity thing, even though they had shame around them.
Yeah. I mean, like, and especially coming to like an age where like I started to realize what like was going on in my actual family. Mm. And like, I had already started the process. Like I had smoked weed and like drank. It was like, okay, well like now this, like, it's like curiosity killed the cat, like almost quite literally. We'll get to that later in my story. So the Xanax use continued all throughout high school.
How do you get your hands on Xanax as a young 15-year-old? Like that blows my mind.
Was it who you surrounded yourself with, do you think, at all?
Yeah, and it was a lot. I mean, it's a lot easier than you think, like in a suburban school.
Interesting.
I mean, like people that you would not expect to be on Xanax at my high school were on Xanax.
Wow.
And like, I don't know, like when you think of Xanax, I see like Real Housewives, like, and they're like, that's like their happy pill, right? But like, that wasn't me. That was not me. That was me like going to school, falling asleep on my desk, drooling.
Oh my God.
Like that's what Xanax was for me. And like, how could that be enjoyable? There's no like real enjoyment of the experience other than the fact that like, I don't have to feel all of this anxiety, all of this self-hatred, all of this insecurity. Like that's where the fun was. It's like, I don't have to think.
For you as a relief.
Absolutely.
Like, so you're through high school basically at this point. I mean, this is only a few years ago because you're 21, right?
Yes.
And it gatewayed you to something else. And like, was it the people you were around, or was it like, you know what I mean? Like what is that part of your story?
So like, I mean, like the people who, not all of them, but yeah, a lot of the people who were doing Xanax around my age group, like, they too didn't stop at Xanax. So me being 16, so I'm 16 when this story mm-hmm. happens. I go over to a friend's house and I mean, like I come over there, I'm buying Xanax, I'm on Xanax. And like, then like a meth pipe starts getting passed around. And like, again, like what Xanax was for me is like, I don't care. Like everything is okay. Like I don't, like, I can't even think about the consequences of like what could happen. And like partially is like, it's because I think like my experience will be different. I am terminally unique where like, mm-hmm. I can pick up this meth pipe and like never think about it again. Cause like I'll be able to put it down cause I'm different. And that was the case for a long time. Like I was on so much Xanax. I hit this meth pipe once or twice and like felt a little, and then went home back to my parents' house and slept. Cause like I didn't really get anything from it cause I was on so much Xanax. After that, like, the Xanax thing got significantly worse. I ended up getting a DUI off a lot of pills. I fell asleep in my car, and then that's what prompted me to go to treatment for the first time. And yeah, I mean, like, from there on, like, I wish it would have stopped at the Xanax. I got sober that first time, and I was like...
So you went, the first time you went to rehab, it was from the Xanax to get clean from Xanax and alcohol and weed and those substances, correct?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Like the first three or so times were, so like I've been to treatment 10 times,
10.
Mm-hmm. 21 from 18 to 20 years old, I managed to find my way into 10 inpatient treatments. And then after that, I mean, like probably 15 to 17 treatments if we're counting outpatients.
Wow.
Like,
that's...
I mean, like my life has basically been like I live in treatment, and that's what I know. So like when they talk about like this is may or may not be like an okay comparison, but like when people are in prison for a lot of their lives, like they're like institutionalized, right? Like that's mm-hmm. like that's what they know. So like mm-hmm. part of me was like really struggled like getting any type of freedom because like all I know is structure, mm-hmm. all I know is like. Treatment. All I know is that inpatient, like wake up at 7 a.m., go to breakfast.
And being restricted because none of the substances are anywhere around you or 100%. Near you or anything. Like it's like a safety net almost at the same time as it teaches you how to be sober, but it's not, none of the substances are there. So it's like
synthetic. Yeah. It's a synthetic environment.
Right.
Like once I'm like expected to like carry on that same lifestyle, like not in the bubble wrap.
Sorry.
You're okay.
Burping.
We do it all the time.
We burp here.
So no, you go ahead and finish your comment. I had a question, but
yeah, I mean, like it took a lot more suffering for me to like actually want to give it up. So like I've been on 3 state mental health and chemical dependency commitments because like my behavior when I'm using is like erratic. It is insane. But like that didn't start until I found my drug of choice. That's not entirely true. I had some crazy behaviors before that, but like once I found my drug of choice, which I'm an IV meth user or no longer an IV meth yeah. user for today. I'm not an IV meth user.
How long have you been clean?
15 months today.
Looks at his watch.
Wow, today.
Congrats.
Congrats. Yeah. That's amazing. And yeah. on the day that we record.
I know. That's
kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
A little bit. Yeah.
Well, I hate to push through the story, but we do have to be
push.
Kind of cognizant
no.
of time.
Push me.
So no. I want to know about... kind of maybe your last type of treatment, because was that when we had more of the chase
yes.
involving the scene? And then, yeah, give me a little bit of that.
So, so the reason, today would be 15 months is because right around April, the beginning of April, 2020, I started using, I got my own apartment. I moved out of my sober house cause I had a better idea than everybody else. And then like, it was just back to use. It was back to what I knew. So, picked up the IV meth, picked up the GHB, picked up the Xanax, picked up anything I could get my grubby little hands on, and went crazy, literally insane. So I got hospitalized cause I was in psychosis, and then I left the hospital. I was supposed to go to treatment, didn't go to treatment. I actually went to treatment and then left my intake in the middle of my intake. So I was maybe there for an hour, and then I had my friend come pick me up cause I wasn't ready. And then I kept using for another 3 days and was in an insane psychosis. I thought the police were going to find me wherever I went. I thought that I didn't have a phone. I thought they were going to track me down. I thought they were going to put me in an insane asylum for the rest of my life. So where that led me to is I was in like New Brighton, St. Anthony, Minnesota. So I left my friend's house who I was with. And then my only solution was like, I can't live. I can't do this anymore. So I walked a couple miles and then I found this bridge, 47 feet tall onto train tracks. And then I jumped off it. I broke my right leg in 10 places, my hip in 3. I got a traumatic brain injury. I had to relearn how to eat, drink, and talk. So like now my speech is a little bit slurred and it's not what it used to be, but like maybe that could be also me like being hyper aware of the way I sound. But yeah, I mean like, and like the looks on your faces, it's
yeah,
like,
because it's just like the way you tell your story. I mean, it came off as just a piece of that part of your life. And I'm like, oh my God, like you were attempting to end your life. Like yeah. That's not something light at all.
And you actually jumped.
And
yes.
you attempted to.
Yes.
Well,
I
mean,
yeah, and I want to like kind of preface too. It's like, there's parts of like while he's talking, you know, and like, you know, like I'm smiling or I'm laughing, and it's just cause it's like, me too, right? Like that's like everybody's sober, you know, like we are like we're all, we understand what everyone has gone through, and it's just like, you know, it's just like another person, like, oh yeah, I did that, or yeah, I tried something like that. And it's just like, it's kind of funny, right? Because like we're sober now, so you know,
you're like, we made it here.
Yeah, like, so you can look back at it and kind of be like, you know, that was stupid, but like in the moment it's like, I mean, hearing it for the first time, yeah, your faces is just like.
Well, yeah, and I'm not judging in any way, and I can't compare what I've been through at all to anything that you guys have been through in that factor. So it's like, however you perceive it now, as you're clean and living your life and you're happy with who you are, is you can perceive it any way you want.
And like, I mean, a lot of people can't relate to that, right? But like, the worst part of my life is like in no way comparable to the worst part of your life, right? Like everybody has terrible parts, and like, what a gift that I've been given, like to look at this and be like, wow, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. That bridge, if I wish I would have jumped off it when I was 18, like learned the lesson then and there. Like I would have saved myself a shit ton of suffering if I would have just like made it really bad for myself. Cause I don't want to change until like things get uncomfortable enough. It's kind of like what Chase was talking about. And like, so that's kind of how Chase and I reconnected, is I was in the nursing home after our hookup. If you could call it that. He blocked me and I added him on Facebook because I was like, I knew I had a crush on him. I was like, I just maybe messed up like the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
So this is when you're in a nursing home.
Yeah, because I was in a nursing home.
Because you're learning how to walk, talk, do everything.
Full-time care.
Yes.
Yeah. Full-time so care. He like, after we reconnected after 3 years, you know, we lived in the sober house 3 years later, we reconnected, and then he jumped off the bridge 18 days later.
My God.
But I had like blocked him on, like we had not talked since that. I had no idea that it happened. Like, yeah.
Wow. And you reconnected. What did you say? Because
no, so I added him on Facebook and I was so fucking annoyed. He like waited a week to even like acknowledge or like acknowledge my friend request.
Well, did you know you're like his lifeline? He was like waiting for you.
I
had no idea. Yeah. You know, I was this is my last impression of him is using, right? Like I had.
And you're clean at that point, and you're like, yep. No, I'm not doing that again. I'm not going that way.
Yep.
You and chose your direction.
Yeah, and again, I'm still not out at this point either, so.
So this is where it gets fun. So he accepts my friend request on August 2nd. August 3rd is my birthday, so I post like a Snapchat, like in my little nursing home hospital bed about like the fact that I'm 21. He's like, oh, you're only 21? I'm like, yeah.
Snapchat with a bonnet on. I don't know why.
Yeah, absolutely.
A bonnet.
No, I made so many friends in the nursing home that like used to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you did.
From there on out, it was just like we started talking, and like I feel like this is stupid to say because like maybe a lot of people can't relate, but like I like fell in love with this kid just like over messaging. Like when I was in the nursing home, like he was not only like when I was sending that friend request up, like he actually became my lifeline. Like there was like a buoy in the water, and like that was him, and I like he like allowed me to grab onto it, which was super sweet. He came to visit me once and brought me this little this hoodie that I still have. It was like, and he washed it with Gain laundry detergent before he came, which was my favorite laundry detergent.
You knew the smell right when you sniffed it.
I did. Yeah. And then he came and picked me up a week later from the nursing home, still in the closet, took the day off work. And then like just over a week later, he told his parents about us. And
oh my God. Oh, wow. And it happened that fast.
Yeah.
You were like, I'm ready.
Yeah. It was like the moment, right? Like my whole life coming out is like my biggest fear. Mm-hmm. And then like, I don't know why, you know, what had happened that was like so different. But it was like, I immediately knew like, I need to give this a try. And it was like the fear of like missing out on this opportunity, like not coming out, all of a sudden became greater than like the fear of coming out for the first time in my whole life.
Wow. Not coming out for him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
And it was like,
wow.
I can't miss out on this opportunity
for love.
Yeah. And so that's like, well, I guess like gotta do it. And you know, I told my parents, I told my roommates, and
and you're here and you're alive and you're okay and you are out and you're happy with someone you love.
Yeah.
And you feel good, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And you guys are both like on this new journey together. And I feel like your strength in your relationship too is knowing what each other have been through, and to an extent, not nearly the same, but like in a way have dealt with an inner demon and grow together now in your new like refreshed lives and with your learnings.
Yeah, like the consequences were different. Like he didn't jump off a bridge, but like the feelings are the same. Like we had like similar experiences. We felt those feelings before, so like on that sense we can relate. Like the end of, like I was never on academic probation in college. I didn't go to college, but like I know what it feels like to not follow through on responsibilities, and like that's what it all comes down to. Like the specifics don't matter.
Man.
Thank you both for sharing your story.
I don't have a lot.
Yeah. I was gonna say we have a few more questions, and one is we have a segment that we do straight candid stories and straight candid advice.
Yeah.
And I'll start with an advice question because it has to do, I think you guys could answer it.
Yeah.
And then we'll go into a little fun straight candid story and we can follow up some more questions that we have for them. So
yeah.
The question that straight candid advice, someone asked, how would you want to be approached by someone who was concerned about you while they were in their addiction? So if someone, how would you want to be approached by someone who was concerned about you while you were in an addiction? So like if someone was concerned, how would they approach you guys? This listener must have something similar going on in their life.
So it's like, what would have been most beneficial for me? Like how should, looking back, how would I have wanted my parents to approach it or something like
or
that?
Or a friend.
Exactly that.
I don't know, I guess. Like it's really...
Like, is there a point?
Like the same thing with me coming out, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do anything until, like, the pain of changing is less than the pain of staying the same. Mm. You know? So it's like I have to get so comfortable doing what I'm doing before I'm going to, like, risk the discomfort of changing.
So you had to get there, not...
Yeah, I don't think... That's the crazy thing about it. And, like, what's really, you know, I think difficult for a lot of families and friends is, like, there is really nothing you can do.
Yeah.
There just simply isn't. Like, because that person is not going to change until they want to, until their personal circumstances, consequences, like, get painful enough.
Yeah. What would you say to somebody who is struggling with an addiction, whatever level it may be, what it doesn't matter what it is, it's an addiction. What would you say to them right now, knowing what you know and sitting where you are?
If they feel stuck in it.
Yeah. If they're listening and they know that.
John can help you out on this one too.
Yeah.
He had to take a potty break.
He's back though.
It's the coffee.
Yeah,
it's
it is. For sure. The coffee and the water.
But I would say, like, I mean, a lot of people say this, right? A lot of people, it's not just me, but like, you know, you've probably heard it too before. It's like, my worst day sober is better than my best day using. Like, there's no high... like that was ever as good as like what things are today.
Yeah.
You know, like life is so good today and I can continue working on myself, like aside from the drugs and alcohol, and like do that, you know, and not be under the influence. And it's like, that is, I don't know, that's just a blessing, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, there isn't, no matter how good you think that high is or using or like, you know, taking away that anxiety or, you know, whatever it is it's, it just doesn't compare.
I love
to where
that
you are
at all.
God, that's good. That's beautiful.
Do you want to ask John the same question?
Yeah. What I asked Chase what he would say to somebody out there who is struggling with any sort of addiction, and they're realizing that they're struggling, but they, you know, they
feel
they
don't
stuck. Have anybody to talk to about it or anything. Like, what would you say to them personally?
To anybody who's like struggling with addiction, I mean, like, obviously, like, it depends on what substance. I mean, any substance really that you're using, you're going to want to start in like some form of medical detox, because like if it's alcohol, if it's a benzo, like that shit can kill you. Mm-hmm. Like the withdrawals can give you a seizure. So like follow medical precautions, like be safe. But it's kind of like what Chase was saying is like, I wouldn't want to feel any different than how I feel today. I mean, like there's nothing better than this. Like it's, when I was using drugs and alcohol, like the problems that like I felt like I had seemed so insurmountable. And that was because I kept causing more problems, right? Like I kept making new wreckage. I couldn't keep up with all the problems I was causing. I couldn't deal with one because I'd already made three more. So like, just like reach out. Like, I mean, and the solution is available. Like it's everywhere. I mean, like look up any support group online, you'll find plenty of groups, plenty of opportunities, and like, just like stepping into the door is the hardest part. But like once you get those feet in, like you're going to want to stick around. Like there's so much love.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Amazing. God, you guys are just so well spoken.
They are well spoken.
I can listen to you all day. But I need to just like actually thank you from both of us, like for opening, sharing, getting personal, being like vulnerable, sharing that part of you that maybe you don't want to remember, you do want to remember and mm-hmm. share to others and help. But either way, like it's your story, it's not ours. And it's in a way where you are right now is the most amazing thing and most beautiful thing in the world. So
I'm happy for you both. I'm
happy for you both, like beyond happy.
Beyond. Thank you.
And thank you for being able to share. And like seriously, the details, because they're going to help somebody out there, whoever is listening to this and needs to hear it, and it's going to get to their ears.
I've had a
know that.
I've had a few friends even that have been like hyped for this episode, because having a topic about addiction is something we've been wanting to do for a while, because it
long
is
time.
So much more prevalent than what we really think it is. The amount of people that probably are in your close friend group that are secretly dealing with some type of addiction is actually more than you think. So thank you both for sharing. And I think we'll lighten the mood a little bit right now just to share. Do we have a Stray Canada story?
We do.
Should we share it?
Do you guys know? Light laugh?
Do you guys know what this is? We're just going
to
share a little story.
I'd love to find out.
Okay. You want to hear
it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I was debating. I'm like, do we even share it? Because I'm like, you know,
I think we can end on a light note.
We can end on a light note because you know what? Where you guys are, you guys are so
cuddled,
beautiful. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, if you're not,
love is so real.
If you're not on YouTube, go quick look at YouTube, because look how cute they are together.
It's just so beautiful.
Wow. And their style. I'm laughing because John walked in wearing a cute shirt. And last time I met with Chase was wearing the same shirt. So you guys swap clothes a lot? Like, what's the deal?
So how it happens is, like, he'll get something and I'll be like, I need this. A good example is the shirt that I was wearing over to his house before he made me put this on. I was wearing, like...
He was wearing my shirt and I made him change into a different one of my shirts.
Yes, I was wearing, like, this vintage twin shirt that I stole because... It would be cute with a pair of jeans that I have. Absolutely.
Yeah,
and I couldn't wear the jeans because it's 90 degrees. So I just wore it with the linen shorts. And he's like, no.
You guys have
just
really
like
good
style, though, I will
but
say.
That's like
a good style.
That's the best thing about being gay is like we can like share clothes.
Share clothes.
That's the best. I love that.
You know?
I can't share clothes with Jordan at all. So
me and
what
you
were you going to say? We
me can
share.
You can share.
Yeah.
Now that you're going to live close to me.
I know. We're going to be neighbors.
Oh.
I love it, you guys. Okay.
What size shoe are you, by the way?
I'm an 8 and 2 and 8.5. Depends on this. These are 8s, but I can feel my big toe wanting to pop right through. Okay.
Quickly before we move on to Stray Canada Story, because we'll end with that. Do you guys have any closing statements about addiction that you want to talk about? Get out there. Say before. Questions for us, because we'll end with our Stray Canada Story from a listener. If not, we'll move right along.
No, like Sid, I like what you said, though. You know, like you thanked us for being on here, but ultimately all anybody has is their own experience and like what they went through and like what they did to be where they are today, you know? And so it's like, that's, you know, that's what we have to do. Like everybody, not just like us, like being gay or being sober or anything. Like everybody just has their own experience and what they did and how they got to like where they are today. So
yeah,
100%. Exactly. And like you thanked us for being here, but like we want to both thank you for letting us be here, because like these opportunities, like things like this, being able to share our experience, our strength, our hope, like this is what keeps us doing what we're doing, right? Like this is how we keep what we have, is by like giving it away, sharing our experience, like possibly being helpful to anybody else. Like that's what keeps us going. So thank you for giving us a platform.
Yeah.
If someone wanted to reach out to you guys about questions about themselves, or if they have questions for you,
if they feel comfortable,
do you feel comfortable like sharing your Instagram handle?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
Absolutely. My Instagram is John, JohnWcailJohnWcail. The W stands for Wellington.
Love it.
We'll make sure
we share it on our
podcast
too. Chase, what's yours?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to write it down because I don't even know if I know mine. I think it's just my first and last name. CHASESOBANIA.
Sabanya.
Sabanya.
She's been doing that since high school.
I was going to say, I'm like, there's no way you just came up with that right now.
No.
Is it right?
Sabanya. Yep. Chase, last name Sabanya. S-O-B as in boy, A-N-I-A.
Correct.
Not to be confused with Sabania.
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 Not Sabania.
Not Sabania.
No.
Sabania.
Yeah, you're like, I learned the hard way. No.
Yeah, I did. I literally did.
I knew it.
Chase,
I literally knew it.
Remember when we made the bill of, social studies video did we make in my basement?
That was Spanish.
Oh, that Spanish, but we also made.
Those were the funnest projects, though.
We the people, in order to form the more perfect union. We made some really cringy.
My God,
IVs. Yeah.
You can sing.
Oh yeah,
you like
do it in private.
Come on, Adele.
Okay, maybe I'll find a really funny video of Chase from high school and put it on our story.
I would not be mad about that.
It's funny.
Please do.
Okay, all right.
This straight candid moment is just—it's just a good laugh. Okay, and we read it on KDWB actually. So if you heard this, if you listened and you tuned in, but God damn it, it's still so fucking good. So here we go. Okay, so straight candid moment I totally forgot about until I went back this weekend to where it all happened. 2 years ago, my boyfriend into my relationship, I went up to his uncle's cabin with his entire family to meet them all. It was a blast, and we played games and drank way too much around the bonfire. Besides for my drinking getting a little bit out of hand and arguing politics with his entire family, that's a completely different story. I had one too many, but things were going well. My boyfriend headed to bed. I stayed up too late with the family, had a few more unnecessary cocktails, and then I politely excused myself around 2, and I waddled to bed with one eye open. I made it to bed. I crawled in, cuddled up to my boyfriend. I'm not sure how long we were asleep, cuddled up for, and I was scratching his back when I was awoken by his aunt. She was coming to go to bed in her bed that I was in with my boyfriend's uncle I had just met that day. I sprung up super confused and look at the bed to find his uncle asleep. Yep, not a dream, not my boyfriend, and it's still awkward. Yes, we are still together, LOL.
Well, yeah. There's only a follow-up question. The only way to like to follow that up is like, was the uncle cute?
Yeah, I mean, like, you never know.
This person was it, back. I need to know.
I will actually ask this person God. If the uncle was cute, and I will get back because
thank you.
I actually will because
that is the best story
Can
ever.
You
just
imagine?
Scratching his back. The uncle's probably the uncle probably thought it was the aunt, you know, just chilling there.
Right? Like they probably neither had any idea.
No idea.
No,
I mean, you're all drinking. You're kind of like, when you're not going to be like, oh, who's crawling in my bed tonight? Like, it's at your cabin. Like,
gosh.
Like, well, you're also at like a strange house. Like, you know, this person like was there for the first time. Yeah. They don't, you know, they're coming in like, drunk.
Oh,
it's like,
man.
It's like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So anywho, we like to throw in a straight candid moment at the end because no matter what the topic, no matter what it is, we lighten the mood. We end it with fun because
that's
fucking realness. And what you guys brought today was realness and candidness. And that's what we want. And we're glad you were here to share across our platform because that's what the platform's for. It's for us. Yeah. Not really, though. It's for other people's stories and other candidness. So
definitely.
Thank you for being
here.
Sharing.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
We freaking love you.
We love you.
We love
As
you.
Always, follow us at Straight Candid Podcast on Instagram. Also, we are produced by the Back Pocket Productions. In the house today, we got Andrew and Sarah. We got Jackson. And we got Adam all the way from Duluth today.
I give him his rock from Alaska. If you guys know what I'm talking about. If you don't, well, too bad. So sad. I brought him a rock from Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Boys, what do we think? Was that a good one?
They're nodding their thumbs and up and everything like that. You guys, tune in next week. We love you. Watch our social medias for upcoming things because there's a lot coming. And we love you and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Good job, guys. That was absolutely amazing.
Are you kidding?
Thank you so much for sharing.
Do you feel like you got what you wanted to say across? Like for the you could go... There's so much detail.
We could talk for
sorry. I just like, yeah,
no.
I got so...
No,
I didn't
no.
Think
you don't ever
time.
You apologize for your story.
Don't ever
apologize.
That was so awesome.
I am so proud.
Hey!
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.